Welcome to Notes from the North with Kyle and Sam.
Well, welcome back to Notes from the North. Kyle and Sam here, and today we are joined by a special guest. Craig Peters is here. Craig, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me. It's nice to be with you.
Yeah. Well, Craig, just for those that aren't aware, can you give us just a little bit of your title and kind of what's the official title that you hold with the Vikings?
Okay. Official title, senior editor. I've actually been with the Vikings since 2014, started in September, then started as a staff writer, and have been able to do similar things the whole run through. And it's been fun to kind of build out the editorial department and have so much fun. You know, this my job includes Vikings.com, written stories in the app, occasionally helping out with other departments, either photography or videography. You know, we have so many great, talented people that it's so much fun to work with. So just try to chip in if they need something, if they have a question. And we also get to cover we have a hand in the Vikings yearbook as well as the Vikings playbook game program. So if you're coming to US Bank Stadium and you have that program in your seat, you know, there's a good chance it's been worked on by us. And, you know, we've had fun doing those because those are such a thrill to continue to get to do.
Yeah. Neat. Well, it sounds like you got your hand in a few different areas and pots. It sounds like you kind of, a little bit of a do-it-all person around some of these dynamics. And I just was going to say, I was doing the math, and so I guess this September is a 10-year anniversary for you.
Yeah, how about that? Isn't that wild? I started, Teddy's first start was my first day on the job. I had driven up from Tennessee the Saturday before. And
Really?
Yeah. So it's really fun to think back on that day. It was obviously a very fun game, beautiful day at the University of Minnesota. Teddy had a big game, Jarek, two awesome guys, you know, and just really drinking from the fire hose, trying to get caught up on all the Vikings lore. And up for my interview, and I went, it was the day before I interviewed was the day they were playing the Patriots. So I got off the plane, went over, I just wanted to see what the game day feel was like, all that, and walked around downtown and everything after the game. And it just really stuck with me. You know, you transfer from the blue to the green line and US Bank Stadium is under construction. And then like you come back and there's this much more of it done. And you're like, oh my gosh, it's going to be amazing if they hire me. And that was actually a few teams into the hiring process of trying to transition here. So it was nothing was taken for granted when I was coming up for that interview, but like I just kept falling more and more in love with everything and go back home. And it's a you know, I've been married for 7 years at that point, and it's a family decision type thing. But Minnesota's been so great to us, and you know, it's just been an incredible ride to get to be here. And I can't believe it's been 10 years and going to be my 11th season with the Vikings. It's just really kind of flown by. But there's been some exciting times, and I feel like there's been some really high highs and enough low lows that I feel like I'm fully Viking.
Right.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, was sports journalism, was this like always the goal, or did you just like stumble into this somehow? Through, you know, sometimes things just kind of work out in life. I mean, what did this look like for you coming up?
Yeah, I love that question, and I love that story because it still resonates with me. I actually went to Mississippi State to study architecture, and I was a freshman one Friday night. My grandparents had got me on Sports Illustrated subscription or whatever, so you get that week's edition, and you take a little break, and you're in the studio, and you're flipping through, and you know, it was the Titans had just gone to the Super Bowl, and there was this photo, like series of photos of that final drive that came this close, right?
Yeah.
So having grown up in Tennessee and seen the team move there and kind of the Titans fever that just exploded that year, I was just flipping through and I was like, man, if I could ever work in sports journalism, I think I would like to do that. And, you know, I was really being honest with myself about my architectural future, and it wasn't fearing that promising, to be frank.
Yeah, sure,
So I spent one more semester in the architecture program, you know, a year and a half in, and those credits don't really change, transfer very, many other programs. So I kind of found a path that would allow me to load up on teaching, coaching, and sports communication classes at State, and kept knocking away those hours and wound up getting hooked up with the college newspaper there, the Reflector, covered, you know, like pretty much every college sport along the way. So it was like volleyball on the volleyball beat right away. And then just kind of you work through and you cycle through, and then men's basketball and then football obviously is, you know, so big and popular in the SEC for sure. So that's where things kind of kept inching toward. And so, you know, you wrap up your degree, you have a couple of years of experience, and then you have like one job offer, and it's north of Atlanta, in the suburbs, and it's a two-person crew and at a newspaper, and it was the opportunity, and it was a good one. And then was able to get hired in Athens, Georgia, at the Banner Herald there, and they had a little bit bigger staff and a little more opportunities to continue to evolve and tell stories. So some great people there that really invested so much in me in my early career development. I'm forever grateful for that.
Neat.
That's very neat. I mean, volleyball beat at Mississippi State, so the Minnesota Vikings senior editor. That's a decent journey.
It is, and I still appreciate you know, the times on the volleyball beat, because that's where I learned about trying to tell stories and kind of develop those skills. And I tell people all the time that are interested that, you know, just have this passion for storytelling, because no matter where, what environment you're in or covering, or the sport, the story is the driver. And that's what drives you and allows you to shine and can open up more and more avenues that you want to pursue, if you want to pursue them. And there are tremendous people that cover all levels of sport, and it's fantastic, because at that point in those athletes' lives, that might be the last game they play. So you have to treat it like you're covering something that's going to be their last opportunity to shine, right? So it's kind of cool to think about it that way. And that's just kind of how I've always try to approach it, where this might be the last thing you ever read that I write. So I try to make it as good as possible. You know, obviously there's some long forms and stuff that you really have a lot of pride in, but you really want to be solid and do the best you can, because you might get one impression to leave on someone, and hopefully they come back and they read you again. And if they can and do, that's great. If they choose that they don't like your writing, then that's fine too. But I think that always chasing the stories and looking for the in-depth stories has kind of been like central to my my path.
Yeah, neat. Well, I know Kyle's got a trivia question for you about post-secondary experience, but maybe before that, just as you're talking with us, it sounds like you've gotten the chance to be a part of lots of different coverage, but maybe we'll narrow the search just to the writing you've done for the Vikings. I like this question. Kyle thought of it. But do you have like a favorite column that you did? Is there one that you look back on and think like, oh, like that I'm really like, whether it's just I'm really proud of it, or I just really enjoyed the work that went into it, or this was well received. Like, do you have a favorite that you could think of? I know it's a hard question.
That's a really, really tough one. I don't know. I would love to for it to roll off the tongue and just be automatic. Mm-hmm. And I'm not quite sure, you know, if there is a favorite. It's a terrible answer to be able to give you. Maybe if I can have a few minutes and we can return. Yeah. I don't want to slow the program too much.
You're good.
And gotta get the gears turning. You know, like it's just it's kind of hard to have have a favorite or think of it that way, because a lot of times you finish it and there's excitement and there's some joy along the way, but then it's kind of like, oh, I guess there's something that needs to be next, you know? So
I think even in your answer, I think it just highlights like even in the answer that like don't give that there's an answer there, and just realizing just the way that this work goes, and even just how you think about the process. So Kyle, I'll let you ask your trivia question.
Yeah. Okay. I got two questions for you before we kind of transition to like kind of Vikings-y things in terms of like the team and football and draft and yada, yada, yada. Okay. So Mississippi State, and you now work for the Vikings. Do you know, this is the trivia, do you know how many players have been drafted by the Vikings from Mississippi State? And if you do you know who they are?
I think maybe three or four, maybe five. Cam Dantzler and it was the safety. Brian Cole, too, were in the same draft class.
You got it. Yeah, 2020.
And I think if you go way back, I want to say someone named Marty McDowell.
You got it. 1981. We're talking about a receiver from 1981.
That's impressive.
39th overall. I'm super impressed. I'm super impressed. And those are your three.
Okay.
You friggin' you nailed it, right?
You know, like I usually like look out at other, you know, I'm putting the playbook together and like going through the rosters for the other team. I'm like, all right, that's an MSU guy. I remember him being good. Like Fletcher Cox and, you know, Dak and Darius Slay and like Preston Smith. Like a lot of these guys seem to like pull out some of their best for the Vikings. And I'm like, man, what is up with this Mississippi State on Vikings just carnage going on? Mm-hmm. But no, it's cool that program has produced so many good players along the way. And, you know, I mean, the SEC is pretty tough sledding, but what Dak was able to do there was pretty special. The kind of like just the way that he exploded long after I had been there. And that was actually the first, as a freshman, that was the first major college football game I'd ever attended, was, you know, first freshman weekend in college. Hadn't been to a pro game, hadn't been to, you know, anything else but that. So, you know, there's just something that bakes in some of those memories that you have there.
Yep. Okay. So that was a very specific question, right? Which, legit, I should clarify, there was no prep. I didn't say. So that was just right off the top of his head. So you got to give him full score for that. Okay, this other question is quite general. I asked Lindsay Young the same thing when she was on a little bit ago. I don't know if it's a stupid question or not, but I am curious to hear your opinion. Can you talk to me about the art of the press conference question? What makes a good press conference question? What kind of can draw out answers from coaches and players and actually create like a productive dialogue or productive reflection?
Yeah, I think first of all, it's realizing that there is a difference usually between either a podium session or a locker room, you know, maybe a mic stand or just guys standing in front of his locker, and then like the coveted one-on-one where you can really kind of set up your questions maybe the way you want them, or just go on the fly, you know. So you try to learn more and more about each person along the way. And the more time you have listening to them, the better informed you are on structuring your questions going forward. So you try to like just put a bunch of inputs in on this is the way that this person has answered this previously, and that's how it was framed. So what if we frame it this way? You know, I listened and enjoyed the Lindsay's guest appearance as well. She did a good job of explaining that. And like you really want to try to have the human connection, but it's very uncommon setting, right? Like someone standing at a podium and like that might be their jam, that might not be their jam. They've may or may not have done that in college or, you know, on the way up probably. So you try to remember there's some grace period and maybe some discomfort for the person at the podium, and phrase things in a way that adds a little comfort, lets them be themselves, answer the way that they they can provide you the best answer, because that's the whole goal, is to be the conduit, right? You know, like, I feel like there can be some folks in the media industry that maybe like have their presence in their questions a little bit sometimes, right? But I think I've always tried to, and especially working for, you know, a team setting, just try to be the conduit and try to figure out what people out there want to know, what they would try to ask, how it will help pass along what this coach or player wants to communicate.
All right. That sounds like a good transition point to me, Sam. You ready? Topic two, Sam? You
good? Yeah, go for it.
All right. Okay. So as far as I can tell, you're kind of in a unique position in a sense, in that, you know, I'm looking at the stuff you're writing recently. You're doing a Monday morning mailbag, and so you're hearing from fans. You're also doing like kind of mock tracker, this kind of thing. So you're looking at analysts and writers and this kind of thing. So you've got fans here, you've got kind of writers and analysts here, and then maybe at the top of the triangle you have the team itself, like actual team sources, the GM, the head coach, the DC, the players, right? So you kind of have these different kind of strands of info all kind of talking about the same thing, which is where the Vikings are heading in the draft. So with that in mind, I kind of want to ask you about that. I mean, so what are you hearing from fans? Kind of what kind of concerns are you getting or interest? How are Vikings fans looking at what's to come right now?
Yeah, I think it's just like, I think I've tried to explain in the mailbag this, like cautious optimism, right? Like that you kind of develop over the years. Like, you know, you just gotta, like, I feel like some people, you know, are already dreading whatever happens, right? And then and some people are so excited they're gonna make anything work. Like even an idea that probably wouldn't be what a team would do, you know, can get behind it. Let's go. You know, just we're all in. We're going forward. So I feel like I try to have a balance of perspectives in the mailbag, because I think that when you expand it out to the broader group of fans, you know, you do have multiple different perspectives, and thankfully they let me introduce those perspectives, and I don't always agree with them. And that's great too, because it shows the dialogue, it shows the passion that people have, it shows the energy. Like even if they have that little dread creeping in, they're still passionate, right? And so I feel like some people are all in on packaging and trading up, and like no cost is too great. Yep. And then I feel like some people are like, well, any packaging is too great of a cost. So like, and you go back and you look at the history of hitting on quarterbacks or not hitting on quarterbacks across the league. And then like a lot of times the guys at the very top go to some of the worst teams, and then there's not that environment there that can really help any quarterback thrive, no matter how talented or whatever any player might be. So I feel like that's an interesting juxtaposition. I think we have that in front of us a little bit already with Sam Darnold coming here now, having been a number three pick. And so it's such an interesting overlap with a former number three pick coming in at this time, that so many people are saying, oh, the Vikings are going to vault up this many spots. And, you know, and so like, it's interesting to see that. Definitely the mock draft roundups, I've seen how willing people are to part with our picks. How valuable that currency is, right? Yeah. So you just, it's the rarest currency in the NFL is those draft picks, you know, like, everyone's like, so many teams are willing to go up to the salary cap. So then it's like what you can do with those picks and maximize the output you get from those players while on those rookie deals. Yep. So
you're basically, you're talking about value now, right? And that's a Kwesi Adofemeke's idea, is like squeezing value out of these decisions, right? And that's reflected in both the contracts, which you're mentioning, then the picks, the actual draft slots where someone's chosen as well. So, I mean, you seem to be speaking the GM's language in a lot of ways.
And I think it's also been interesting to see him come from like the Wall Street trader market. You know, some people scoff at that, but like, this is like, there's there's not, it's not hard to put the dotted line from his previous experience to to this. It's just finding out the information about football as opposed to, you know, other things that were being traded, right? And, and dealt and managed. So, and then he forms that staff. And I really do, I know the word collaboration gets thrown around a lot, and some people on the outside might, no way, these guys are, you know, this, you know, collaborative or whatever. But I really do think that the way he and Kevin O'Connell have set it up is they really do create an environment for people to share their opinions. It might not, it might not be what makes the ultimate decision, you know, but I do think that all the information, all the inputs are being considered and kind of like sorted through in a way that ideally leads you to making the best possible decision with what you have to use to make that decision. I mean, it's just kind of interesting to always see how that shakes out. And I love how everyone's predicting what, you know, each team is going to do. And everyone at a team is trying to predict what the 31 other teams are going to do right now too, because like, if you do try to package, you're like, well, how far do I need to go? What offer do I need to be prepared to beat? Do I have a walkaway price that says, no, I just can't do this deal? So, and I feel like with the session that Kwesi did last week and then the one that O'Connell did this week, you know, I feel like they have some parameters in place and guardrails, and they've prepared for so many scenarios that and have had all this informational, this feast of information, you know, to sort through and process and rank and prioritize. And also they've been very forthright in saying that they think there might be multiple paths that a team can take. So it's an exciting time. I mean, you guys know, right?
Yeah, I mean, okay, so like I don't know Kwesi Mensah, I don't know Kevin O'Connell. I watch the press conferences of all the team, this kind of thing. The sense I have is that they're actually genuine dudes. Like they're up there in a press conference and they're like, you know, they can be evasive because they don't want to tip their hand about like, what, you know, what am I actually going to do? So they can be a little bit like almost like a politician, a little evasive, but they actually seem to be quite genuine. And so when they say, hey, look, we feel like we have flexibility, like we did this deal with Houston because it gave us maximum flexibility, or at least that was our sense. And I was like, I kind of believe them. Right. And so, I mean, is that your sense as well, where it's like, you know what? Like, and a lot of times there's this kind of assumption that the Houston deal therefore means aggressive trade up, and it's basically a foregone conclusion. That's sometimes the assumption. I don't sense from either of those top two dudes that they feel like it's a foregone conclusion. I mean, it's certainly possible, but it's a possibility within many possibilities, and therefore flexibility. Is that your sense, that they're actually genuine in that belief?
Yeah. And I think Kwesi did a great analogy of calling it insurance too, because you don't know if you're going to have a trade partner. If you determine that you do want to slide up, you also have to have a dance partner. And if it's like my middle school and no one wants to dance with me, you know, it is what it is. Right. So, sure. Like that adds insurance. And then like, you see how many offensive players are projected, and the steam behind this quarterback class, and, you know, a couple of receivers and the tackles, which aren't the biggest areas of need, I think most people would say, for receiver or tackle here. So that can kind of push that down, which kind of inflates the value. If you are able to hang on to the 23rd, or perhaps even hang on to the 11th, it might be a little bit higher. So this is we're recording on the 25th anniversary of Dante Culpepper being selected 11th by the Vikings.
Yeah. Highest the quarterback has gone, I believe, in Vikings
history. Yes, you're correct. Very much so. Yeah. Highest in franchise history. That draft, Tim Couch 1, Diamond McNabb 2, Akili Smith 3, then a long gap, and then Dante 1 spot ahead of Cade McNown. So 5 QBs went off 25 years ago.
Yeah.
3 at the top. Some other great players in between Akili Smith and Dante going off the board. Edgerrin James was one at four,
right.
I believe. So it's just so interesting to see how things might slide, might affect. And then like, I guess my question is like, how, like, do prices go up or down in the next week, or they just level off? Have they leveled, or are they, you know, does the cost of going up change between now and then, or could we go ahead and have this drop and everyone move on and start, you know, getting fitted for pads and helmets, right?
Yeah. Okay. Well, on that note of unpredictability and flexibility, Sam, do you want to kind of move into the crystal ball portion where we, you know, Craig Peters kind of looks into the future and tells us with certainty what's going to happen?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's do it. I was going to say, this is Craig. Yeah. This is where the pressure mounts. Where
seriously.
Looking for all the right answers. No, not at all. But I think, like, you're talking about this a little bit of these dynamics, and I like, if I hear correctly, I think there's almost a part of, I think there's an experience right now where it's like, there's been a lot of talk about what's going to happen, and we're like ready for it, like for the dance to start, to use it's your time. Illustration, ready to do this. But before we get there, just out of a fun prediction again, curious to hear, just some of these are going to be numbers. Some of them are going to be thoughts. But we got two sets of three questions. So the first is going to be more draft specific. So let's start there. So for the NFL draft, this is not Viking specific, this is just total NFL draft. How many round one quarterbacks do you think will go? So how many quarterbacks will go in round one in this draft?
I mean, that would be pretty incredible. No draft has ever had four go 1, 2, 3, 4. You guys know that. So there's been a couple instances where I think maybe four total, where it's been 1, 2, 3, and 99 was one of those. And I think 2021, 2023, and one of those other years is escaping me right now. But there's been so much steam for, like, I mean, I was explaining to a colleague who's heading to her first draft. So she started with us after last year's draft, and about just how unique this could be to even be in the conversation of taking a quarterback in the first round, right? Because, you know, Teddy had already been drafted by the time I got here. Once with the Tennessee Titans for 4 seasons, I was kind of like in a seasonal role between 2010 and 2011. So Jake Locker got drafted in that gap. So like, this is the first time I've ever had first round QBs on the radar so much. And like, I have a document I'm working on right now with lots of different scenarios for our coverage plans too. So there's so many people out there that think it is a trade up situation for the Vikings, and because of the quick fly off the board of quarterbacks. And then those same people believe that really just continues to boost the demand, and it might lead to six. I don't know if the demand is going to be that inflated. It could be. Six would be very historic. It's rare to have that many even mentioned in the first round, right? There's that component too. So I think this timeline of things where, you know, the offseason, the Vikings prepared to have Kirk come back or move on from Kirk. And it just happened to line up where you're getting so many positive thoughts heading toward the direction where there could be six. I don't know. Like, what number do you guys have? Can we do an average here? Can we put the three together and see what we come up with?
Will that be your answer? I was going to say, I feel like six, I hear some caution around six.
I'm not a big on a limb, but like, you see the six mentioned that many times. I think five is probably, you know, more history shows five, right?
Yeah.
Over six.
Yeah, for sure.
But let's, Let's go with the very unofficial five.
Five. Okay. Yeah. I think five feels like a safe bet almost. Like it feels like you're almost like, even you look at, you can look at names, but also look at teams that want a quarterback. Five feels like the number, like that would be the number I'd do, but it does feel like six feels entirely possible.
And six is the record. The 1983 NFL draft, chronicled beautifully by the Elway to Marino, 30 for 30. If you haven't seen that, that's a really good program. Kind of shows what the draft has become too. Right. Like, you know, they're just like sitting around the conference room. Now you got like, you're taking over city blocks and, you know, just fan pins and everything, people all geared up and everything. So live entertainment and guest appearances and stuff like that. So so six in that Elway to Marino class, I mean, that's a couple of Hall of Famers, but then you had a couple others that didn't really pan out either. So that's kind of wild that, you know, like, even if you put everything in and convince yourself that this is the player for you, it still might not work out, right? For one reason or another. Like, it can be like, it just didn't pan out, system fit, or like organization in transition, or like the development curve just didn't track, right? So like, it's just all very, very interesting to see that. But I'll stand firm with five. We won't match 1983. How about that?
Okay. Kyle, do you have a bold prediction? Kyle and I were I would say we're relatively not, I don't know.
Yeah.
Bold, like, I don't know, Kyle's not going to throw at eight, I don't think.
No, goodness, no. No, five's pretty safe. It almost like, it feels like when you do like a season record prediction, you say like 9-8 or 10-7. You know, it's much more bold to say 15-2 or like 3-14 or something. Five feels pretty safe. I think pretty reasonable. Yeah, five. Okay. I'll echo that.
Okay, good. So that's one prediction. This one, I think, just related to what we're talking about here. And again, this is a hard number, so you can just kind of throw out a range. Although, it would be impressive if you guessed it right on. How many picks do you think will happen before a defender is chosen in this draft?
Oh, that's wild. Yeah, it could be quite a few. I mean, you're looking at that, and like, I've seen some of the people that are really spend a lot more time on the draft than I do and have a lot more expertise than I do. I mean, they're projecting 20 something offensive players in the first round, which would be a record if it exceeds 19. So that could push things down quite a bit. And you look at team needs as well as where it's going, and like the sheer talent level at positions like the QB and the receiver and the tackle that are highly coveted in a league that's becoming more and more pass driven, you know, all the time. So I feel like that can really push things down a little bit. Some people think that, I think I've seen in multiple mocks that Atlanta might go defense. I don't know. You know, it's a coach from a defensive background. I don't, you know, but I think in that ballpark, it could happen. I hate to speculate on what any team would. I feel like I need to put out like a full-fledged disclaimer now. I'm not saying anything that a team will do, you know.
No, but,
I think the effect, and O'Connell talked about this, is there are going to be defenders who would normally go earlier that are still on the board. Yep. And that will make like the spots in between 11 and 23, if the Vikings wind up keeping 11 and 23, very interesting. And that's where that flexibility could come in on the back end, because I've also been writing it as if, you know, you can package both, trade up, you can stay put at both spots, you can package one or the other, nudge up, nudge down, you know. So like, I do feel like part of it will be seeing how the board plays out, because as predictive as you want to try to be, and I mean, you can even use the advanced analytics for how things have done and do your homework on what other player personnel departments have done and team needs and everything, there's still like that little like human element on draft night, right? The unpredictability. And that's why we all love it. And we tune in and we want to be surprised, right? We want that, like, we want to be right and we want to be surprised at the same time. It's kind of an interesting dynamic, right? You're being like, I nailed that one. And then I can't believe I did that. So
Yeah. Good. Okay. Well, I think that's good. So I'm going to ask one more before maybe Kyle, I'll turn it over to you to do the second set of questions. So last one, and again, you don't have to, you can just kind of throw out a number here if you want. But overall trades that will happen in the first round, what would be the number on that? What's the guess in terms of how many trades will happen? I think mainly just like looking at how like swapping picks, how many trades do you think will happen round one for NFL wide?
And that's during the draft only. That's not like
April all 25th.
Existing.
Yeah.
I think four is probably a good, I'm just spitballing, but I think four, it might go crazy, right? Like I feel like once one team makes a trade, everyone else gets like, oh, trades are starting to come. I feel like it was, I want to say last year, and I don't have it in front of me, so I apologize, but like, I feel like it was straight. And then all of a sudden one, and it was like trade, you know? So, I feel like once one happens, that knocks over the trade dominoes pretty quickly. And there starts to be a lot of movement, and maybe the outcome of one trade kind of send another team onto its second plan or even third plan, maybe. I don't know. So let's just go with four. I imagine that's going to be low, but like, again, I'm not anyone should trust to try to predict this. It's just kind of fun to speculate, right?
The full disclaimer is there's no inside information. Just speculate at this point. How about you? Take with just a couple of questions around the end, like what the draft could look like for the Vikings.
Yeah, so Viking specific, you kind of mentioned the idea of disclaimer. I'll throw them at you. You can throw them right back, or you can guess. Kind of up to you. Okay, so right now the Vikings are going into the event as of right now with 9 draft picks. Do they make that amount, more or less?
That's an interesting question too, because right now it's top heavy and then it's bottom heavy, right?
And
we know how we got here, right? Part of the deal to get the second first was trading the second this year.
Exactly.
Yep. And I think the third was part of the Hockenson deal, which
precisely
really good tight end.
Nine
catches. That's, you know, like, and it was good to see him this week too. Just seemed like he's in a good spot with his rehab process. It's a long one, but I think he's seemed like he's in a good spot, has good resources here. So that guy's a really fun guy to be around, you know, in the locker room and everything. And I think that, but anyway, so there's two firsts and then there's a gigantic gap. And you're not on the clock again, I think, until 108 right now. So is it a situation where you could package some of the day three picks and try to get back in?
Yeah.
Always potential, but it might not fully, if you're trying to move up from 108 to like 60, that's probably going to take a little more, right? You know, so I'm not looking at a draft chart or anything like that right now, but if you want to move up, now you can kind of be targeted with who you think will be available at those. And I think that's kind of what they've had to do in years where the picks have been fewer heading into the draft, is like you really try to home in on who will actually be just a few spots here or there, because you don't have enough draft capital to navigate a big move. Right. Mm-hmm. So now that you have 9 picks, you can package a few more. You can go up, you can, you know, go down a little bit, I guess, maybe, but I would think you'd be interested in going up before you go down later type thing. I think a couple of years you're able to go up and get a pick, and then or go down and then get another one from the same team. Even it, I feel like that's happened before. And they decide they want that pick back, you know, type thing. So you went down and then you nudged down again and you got a couple more. Where the roster is right now, you know, it's a quality, it's a need thing. This area is where this position group still needs competition and depth heading into training camp. And, you know, I feel like it's been a fun, interesting off season. I don't want to use the word fun, but like, it's been such a unique off season, with the departure of quarterback, with the departure of Daniil. We're going to miss both Burke and Daniil. They were always really great, people around me and just complete class acts, and wish them both well. But then like, we're so active in free agency, right? So wow, this is okay. It's like, all right, we're going to do that, Matt. Okay. All right. There's smoke coming off the keyboard. Right. So, so that's been interesting too. So they have been able to add, talent in depth in free agency a little bit more than kind of leaning on draft and priority free agents. Right.
All right, fair enough. Then we talked with him being a stock trader, and he certainly has pulled off quite a few trades, you know, over the course of drafts. First draft, Wasey Dokumensa had 6 trades. Last year, I believe they're at 3. Do you have a number in mind for trades, or is we're just gonna pass on that one?
Yeah. What do you think? No, I mean, I think that's obviously it. You know, if you do what people would say a big move, that might reduce your number of throughout, especially if you're having to give up some more capital. I think three is probably a good thing to assume going into any draft, you know. And last year started with fewer picks, so there's a lot less movement that could happen than in 2022. So let's go 4.5.
I love it. Okay. Okay. And then the last one here for you is, so there's been Sequisto Fumenza has made 16 draft selections across his 2 drafts, 10 and 6. And there's been an even split, 8 offensive players, 8 defensive players. Do you think, does that maintain that even split, or does it tilt one way or the other? What do you think?
I think it could start to tilt this year, just given how many defensive players were added through free agency. And you know, it's been awesome to have Flores in place for a second year heading in, and he can really kind of, he's like, you know, I just want to like step inside that mind and learn learn, right? You know, so he's got all these plans and can target guys, and he already knew Van Ginkle, so that's great. And obviously, like what he saw from the Texans defense with Grenard and Cashman, so that really. Adding those guys, adding Shaq Griffin was a nice touch too. So like, you really just, and then a lot of versatility up front. So I feel like having him in place and for free agency in full effect might lean a little more toward offense, might lean a little more toward defense, and you know. Kevin O'Connell did say he plans on there being a competition at kicker as well. And I don't know if that means that they draft a kicker too. So then that throws off the odd even or the offense defense map a little bit too. So I don't know if that would be through the draft or an undrafted free agent or, you know, like someone else maybe coming from another league after that league wraps up. But it'll be interesting to see. There's time to make that happen. But with 9 picks, you might be more enticed than if you have 6 picks to direct one toward a specialist, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, 7 day free selections, right? So it kind of has that up. There's two on day one, there's 0 on day 2, at least right now, and then 7 on day 3.
Yeah, that document I'm working on with our coverage plan. I'm like, all right, 7. Okay, let's do some trades. And no, let me put my, But no, I mean, and it's weird because like some years it's where the quantity like really comes into effect. If you think about Blake Brandel and Josh Metellus, both 6-round picks.
Yeah, man. These are good players. Yeah.
And so, like, that's mining the draft, you know, and but not all of those guys work out. Like, I think we've had 4 7th rounders some years, and, you know, it's been a kind of a mixed level of guys landing or not landing with the team when they're a 7th rounder. So there is that. But I think that just like, you probably try to prepare for so many scenarios. You probably have to think about, if we really think a player gets well below his range of value and is still on the board, what could we do to get there?
Yeah, exactly.
But you don't ever want to like force things too hard. I just think that would be a bad, bad place to start.
Yeah.
Thank you for these thoughts, man, and for your time.
Yeah. Craig, thanks so much for joining us. Sincere thanks. So I know you're at Vikings.com. People can find your work there. Also, you're on X/Twitter at P. Krager S. We'll put the link into it.
P. Kragers. Yeah. I don't know. I've never been... I think I'm just old enough where social media is not my favorite place totally to be, fair. But totally fair. No. I understand it does good. I understand it does bad. There's both things can be true. People who are really good at it, I'm entertained just along with everyone, but it's just never been a strength. It's never been a joy. I try to do it. I try every year. I'm like, oh, let me be a little more active on Twitter or whatever, or X or whatever, you know. And then I'm still working on that part of my career development. I appreciate you guys having me. I appreciate anyone that hears this and comes to Vikings.com, checks out anything. Mm-hmm. It's been fun to be on the mailbag duty for about 2 years now, close to that, I think, and really kind of build a rapport with people in that role, because it was previously handled by Eric Smith. He was our team reporter. Right. He's now with the Chargers. Really proud of the work he's doing out there. Really happy for him. And so it's Lindsay and I for you this off season, and really so happy to continue to get to work with her. She's incredible. You guys have had her on and know that. And she's so much better at social media than me. It's just so funny. I'm just like, Lindsay, what? Yeah. I get her on speed dial or whatever. So, for the younger crowd, that was on phones, and mm-hmm. when you really needed to reach out to someone.
Well, we all got our strengths, so that's great. So that anything else, maybe just as we wrap up here. Anything else that you'd like to point people towards, or anything else that just would be helpful for us to know about finding your work?
Just Vikings.com. The app is brand new this year. It's on Yen's Cam. So if you haven't checked that out, please do so. The official team app has everything, makes it nice and easy. It's awesome when you're on the go. It'll have like video interviews. The Vikings podcast is on there as well. So I like to just catch up on a few things when I'm in route too, type thing. Those are the best places, and hopefully everyone can make it to a game and get their playbook and read a feature story and continue to make US Bank Stadium the best atmosphere, or the atmosphere mm-hmm. that we've come to know and love. Yeah. I don't want anyone to be like, oh, he's so biased, but it really is an incredible venue, and that's in large part because of the crowd that cares so much.
Yeah, no, I think that's I think even league wide, US Bank Stadium is widely regarded as one of the best atmospheres. So I don't think that's a biased perspective at all. Thanks again, Craig, for joining us here, and appreciate everyone listening. Yeah, we'll be back with, we're draft is just around the corner here. So hope everyone has a great week, and we'll be back soon. Thanks, everyone. Bye.